So we are holding on an aleph on an aleph, fourth line. We learned previously in the Mishnah about that a husband is not able to establish chazaka on his wife's mechasim, and we dealt with all the ins and outs of that the last couple of days. Now we're going to deal with the other way around. We say in the Mishnah that a woman is not able to establish chazaka on her husband's mechasim. Presumably, we would think, as we said when we learned the Mishnah, because we assume a husband is not machped on his wife. But the question is, the Gemara asks, Chitta, isn't it obvious? Never mind the question of whether he objects or not. Kivin de Isla Mazoni, given that she is entitled to Mazonis, it's one of the Tanoi Ksuba, that she's entitled to financial support from the husband, that she's entitled to the husband provides her with food. Presumably, if she's taking the payrus of a field, fine, she's entitled to those payrus as her mezonis. Obviously, therefore, we would assume the husband is not moicha, because that's the normal arrangement. The normal arrangement is that she's taking the payrus for her mezonis, which she may eat some of those payrus, sell some of them, whatever the point is. That obviously she has. We don't assume she has any ownership of the karka itself. The husband wouldn't think to be moicha. Why should we think she should have a chazaka?
On the field?
Like this, if she's eating the payrus of the field for 3 or more years, why would we think that she should have a chazaka? Yeah, obviously, we would assume that he's giving it to her as mezonis. The answer is, fine, but the Mishnah can be talking about a case. What if there's a different piece of land that he designated where the fruit of that one is going to be for your mezonis? You would think then, okay, fine, that one obviously she has no chazaka on, because any payrus she has of that is for her tanoik sugar. But now when she's going and taking payrus from some other field of his, you would think maybe you would expect him to be moicha, and if he doesn't, then it means that he obviously sold it to her. No, we would still say that the husband obviously is not going to be particularly machbid if she eats extra. So therefore no chazaka. We can't assume the fact that he wasn't moicha means that he actually sold it or gifted it to her or whatever. That part is straightforward, but now we're going to complicate things a little bit, as the Gemara always does. So, again, just like we mentioned in the case of the husband having chazaka on his wife's nechassim, where we inferred from the Mishnah, since it mentioned he doesn't have chazaka, the implication is, but if he has a raya, then the raya can be considered a valid raya. So we can ask the same thing over here, a raya yesh. Now, the implication of the Mishnah is, if the wife comes with an actual raya, edim or shtar or whatever, that she bought this character from her husband, then that would work. The problem with that is, lema legaluya zuzer hu debay. Why shouldn't the husband have the ability to say that, you know what, of course, character can be bought the kesef, but this shouldn't be a valid kinyan, because the only reason I was willing to go through to go through with what looks like a sale is because I suspected that she has money that she's hiding from me, which by right should be either that it belongs outright to me, that she may have taken it from me illegally, even if she didn't take it from him, nevertheless it should be considered nichsim malug, and I should be entitled to the payrus of it. So what I did is, when she came saying, I'd like to buy this particular piece of property from you, my husband, I think to myself, okay, well, then that means she's going to have cash for it. Good. Well, then we'll find out. Where's that cash? I'll sell you the property. Then she brings out the money. Now he should be able to argue that this cash, either that it outright belongs to him because she stole it from him, or that maybe not outright, but at least it should be like regular nichsim alug. And if we're going to buy karka with it, it's going to be karka where I'm going to get the payers. Not that I'm selling my karka to you where you're going to own the goof. Why doesn't he have that as an argument? Yes, you have Adim, yes, you have a shtar, whatever it is, that you bought this karka, but I only agreed to the sale, Legaluya Zuza, only in order to reveal the cash that you claim not to have, which in fact you do. But the sale itself is not a sale.
If she were to spend $100 and buy a field from him,
So the argument is, now, there could be valid money that is hers. You could have, for example, there are cases. You can have, she can receive a present on Menashe and Labayla Rishuspa. It can be extra Maisia there that she did over and above the normal amount. There are ways that she can have money of her own. But here we're talking about, we're going to talk about as we go through the Gemara, we're going to be making a distinction later on between Mois Tmunin and Mois She'enin Tmunin, whether the money was hidden or not. Did he know about it beforehand? So right now, we're asking, on the face of it.
Do you have an obligation to tell him?
Yeah, because the money, again, either the money is supposed to be his outright, it's actually his money, and she took it out of his wallet or whatever, or she inherited it or whatever, somehow got it in a way that it should be nixim alug, in which case they should be buying karka and he should be having the payers of it, like any other nixim alug.
Even if it was hers before the marriage.
Yeah, but, well, if it was hers before the marriage, then it's going to become either nixit tzayin barzol or nixim alug, as the case may be, unless of course he waived it, as we learned before. But
does she have a right to conceal those assets?
No, that's what we're saying. That's what we're arguing. Yeah. Does that mean that we can prove, based on our Mishnah, based on the inference from our Mishnah, that in fact, if a husband sells a field to his wife, kansa, she is validly kohen it. And we wouldn't say this business of Lagaluya Zuzit. Now we're going to have a machloikas on that point later on in our sugya. It seems from our Mishnah that we can prove that the answer is yes, that the thing works. Because the implication, that's what we're saying, because the Mishnah is saying she can't have a chazaka in his field. In other words, if she has only a chazaka and no shtar or edim or what have you, she has a chazaka, and of course a taina to go with the chazaka, that I bought this field from you, but I don't have any proof of it because I lost my shtar or whatever, then we wouldn't accept that because we would assume she was just fine, she was eating the payers, but the husband wasn't makpid. But the implication is if she actually brings edim or shtar that she bought a piece of land from him, it sounds like it would work. Now we're going to have a machloikas on that topic, and it seems that we can answer from our Mishnah that
with one side saying
that it works, and then the other one saying that not. So now we see from our Mishnah evidently that yes, such a thing works. The answer is loy. No, you can't necessarily prove that from the Mishnah, because you could say ema horaya yesh b'shtar matana. Because you could say fine, you can. It's true. You can infer from the Mishnah that there could be a case where she actually has a raya that she owns the field, and that we would accept that raya and say the field is hers, and therefore she can, and therefore now she's able to establish chazak on it. However, what would that be talking about where the shtar is that he gifted the field to her? Well, if he gifted it to her, obviously it's not like Galuya does it, because then no money changes hands anyway. So yes, if she has edim or shtar,
the field to her, obviously.
Well, that would be the case. When you want to infer from the Mishnah that Haraya Yesh, fine, the Mishnah might be talking only about that kind of situation. There can never be a chazaka of hers, a chazaka along with a taina. You always need edim or shtar. But even edim or shtar, at least according to that opinion, wouldn't work if it was a sale. It would only work if it was a gift. So now we're going to discuss that point. Amalei Rav Nachman. Yeah, from him, yeah. Amalei Rav Nachman Rav Huna. So one time, Rav Nachman tells Rav Huna in this connection, "Lo yhavam mar gabon ba'urta b'tchuma." You, Rebbe Rav Huna, were not with us yesterday. It's a pity you weren't with us yesterday in the evening in the tchum. What do we mean in the tchum? So the Rashbam says that the tchum means the Beis Medrash, because the Beis Medrash was usually built by the edge of the tchum, with 2,000 amos or close to it, away from the city. That way, not only people could come from the city, but they could also come from the surrounding villages and be able to come to the Beis Medrash on Shabbos. There's a couple of different other explanations what tchum means. We had this expression in Bava Kamma also. Rashi explained over there what it meant is, it's a pity you weren't within the tchum of the Beis Medrash. You were more than 2,000 amos away from the Beis Medrash on Shabbos, that you weren't able to come and join us in the discussions over there. And the Aruch explains that the Beis Medrash itself is actually called the Tum, because it's the zone of learning Torah. It's the Tum of learning Torah. Anyway, so you weren't with us, and it's a pity. Damrin and Mili Maliyasa, because we discussed they were a very important topic. Amalei my Mili Maliyasa, I'm with you. So Rav Huna says, okay, what was this great, fascinating topic that you talked about? So he says like this, so Rav Nachman tells him that this din that we just quoted, if someone sells a field to his wife, Kansa, we say she is validly koneh, we don't say that the husband has the ability to say afterwards, I only pretended to sell it to her because I wanted to find out where's that money that she's been hiding from me all this time.
Even if he tried.
Yeah, so we're saying that even though he can claim that was the intent, we're saying we don't accept that. We don't accept that. It's still considered a valid sale. On the lay, so Rav Huna tells him, Shita, well, of course, of course, why would you think otherwise? After all, Gal Zuzim Yehacha, okay, even if you say there was no exchange of money, even if you say, fine, let's set the money aside, the money may not have validly been hers to be able to acquire this field with. However, there is a shtar, a tikni b'shtara. Let her be able to be, she of course she's kona the field, she's able to be kona the field on the basis of a shtar. We know there's three ways to be kona. He gave her a shtar. That's the question. Now, Tosfos says it's not so simple. We learned in Kiddushin, when we learned about this concept of that a field can be acquired because of the shtar of a chazaka, we said over there that actually, in principle, it can be one or the other out of the three of them, but it depends. You have places where the minhag is that you need two out of the three. You need money and you need a shtar. So when we're talking about a place over here, so when we're talking about a place that where they require a shtar, where kesef is not enough to establish that the person has bought the field, then Rav Huna is saying, well, you have a shtar over here. If this
and
is
there was an exchange of money.
Well, no, he's saying even if there wasn't an exchange of money, he's saying like this: if it's a place where the common minhag is that we only consider the things of kinyan depend. I mean, you have dinim in the Torah, such as, for example, kesef shtar and chazaka, but you also have minhag hamaka. So you have places, there were some places where the minhag is to write a shtar, and other places not to, and then the other places where the minhag wasn't necessarily to, that as soon as money changed hands. So Rav Huna is arguing then that because you can have places, for example, where they consider as soon as the shtar changes hands, the kinyan takes place, what about the money? You'll owe me the money later. That's what Rav Huna is arguing. In a place like that, which evidently that's the kind of place Rav Nachman and Rav Huna apparently lived in a place where that was the minhag, so Rav Huna is saying, so in that case, what's the chiddush of your din? Even if you didn't have money over here, there was a shtar. The shtar where we live is enough to establish the kinyan by itself. As far as the money, fine, it'll mean she owes him the money at some future date. But the sale should be a sale.
In this place?
In this place, yeah. But that's the point. He's saying, what's the chiddush of what's the chiddush of what you're saying? That's the question. I mean, also Tosfos talks about that. You could have a case. You could also have a case. There could be a certain chiddush in what Rav Nachman is saying. Suppose the shtar was written first, and later on she pays the money. So then he could say that I didn't write the shtar; I only wrote the shtar. Normally, we would say, fine. If it's a place where a shtar is not necessarily customarily written, then if you write a shtar, obviously you're doing it in order to establish that the field is hers. But if he only wrote the shtar because she's demanding a shtar before she's going to give over the money, obviously he can still claim the galuya zuzit. And then he can still claim that I only wrote the shtar not in order to establish that the field is hers, but in order to demonstrate that she actually has the money.
So let's say after a while she gives him the money. How is he going to prove that it was just the galuya zuzit?
Well, that's the thing. What Rav Nachman is saying is that we don't say la galuya zuzit hu debay. So Rav Huna is asking on them, you don't need that anyway. The shtar is a shtar, and if later on, if we don't consider that the money was valid, if we do consider the money was supposed to be his after all, and therefore the sale shouldn't have been valid on that basis, but it's valid on the basis of the shtar, and it just means she owes him the money for the field if the sale is going to, if the sale is going to go through.
So you mean if we were allowing him to claim this, then what would happen is he would say, thank you for the $100. He'd keep the $100.
He would keep the $100 because he'd say that it was mine all along. Or we would say that we'll buy with a karka and I'll have payers, as the case may be. Yeah.
Because Amigu, she would say, I borrowed the money.
If she borrowed the money from him, then she'd need some proof.
So the sale would be valid.
Yeah, she'd need some kind of proof of that, wouldn't she? I don't, Amigu doesn't, I don't, you know, I don't
major Amigu. She'd come, she said that I borrowed the money, it's not mine. What kind of giggleries is it as here?
So who did you borrow it from? Let's find that mother.
She gives the money to a friend, and her friend tells her, okay, let's make as if we borrowed it. I borrowed it from you.
If she can bring that Malvo, fine, I guess. I don't know. Anyway, Mila Tanan, afterward, of Huna continues, don't we learn in a Mishnah, in that Mishnah in Kedushin, the Chos and Sheyeshalayan Achrayis, Niknin Bekesifor Shtar V'Chazaka, that real estate, Nechasim Sheyeshalayan Achrayis, which is what we call real estate in Gemara terminology, because there's achrayus on it in the sense that when you borrow money, your shibud is...
Wait, can it be achrayus between a husband and a wife on a karka?
That's what we're going to talk about that soon, actually. But yeah, right, if it's a sale is a sale, yeah. But when we say nechasim sheyesh lein achrayus, it means something else. It means achrayus in the sense that if there's a debt, if there's a choiv out there, then the shibud is able to fall on this karka. It can't fall on the talblin. We know, we've learned any number of times that there's no shibud on the talblin.
Yeah, okay.
Never mind Kinyan Agav. No, we're not talking about Kinyan Agav. We're talking about if a person borrows money, if Reuven borrows money from Shimon, yeah, we had a few days ago a rare case where you create a shibud through Kinyan Agav and include Metalplin in it. But ordinarily the shibud is only on Kauka. That's why we call it Nchotim Shesh Lan Achra.
That was the case where they're on the boat and they said, oh, we forgot to do the
No, that was a case that we had the other day where you do a shibud via Kinyan Agav to say, I'm being mashabed to you, my field, as well as what?
The day I wasn't here.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
I should have been in the tomb.
Okay. And the Mishnah says over there, Nishman Bekesef or Shtar v'Chazaka. They can be acquired with any of these independent things, Kesef or Shtar or Chazaka. Again, once a Shtar is written, then that's it. The sale is final. Neither one can renege on it, but the money is owed. So then in that case, if he wrote her a Shtar, then that's it. The sale is final. And if he claims afterwards that if he claims afterwards that the money was mine all along, it shouldn't have been used for this purpose in the first place, fine, Beis Din will say, okay, but the sale is still a sale. She owns the field. She owes you that amount of money. So again, what's the chiddush in what you Rav Nachman are saying? That's it.
That
she's kohen.
It's either a shtar or
that's what we're saying. Either kesef or shtar or chazaka. Yeah. So that's the question. In other words, Reb Nachman is telling us that the husband has the ability to say legaluya zuze based on that Mishnah. We're saying, assuming that there's a shtar here, which again, in their place, apparently the minug was to write a shtar. As soon as a shtar is written, the Mishnah is telling us, even if no money changed hands, the kinyan is a kinyan. At that point, sure, he can claim legaluya zuze that I wanted to find out where the money is. The fact is, now the sale is valid. He now has the ability to say, okay, but I get that money, and you owe me other money for it. The answer is Amalei. Sort of Nachman answers Valav Itman Allah. Yeah, but don't you know that there was an explanation on that Mishnah? That Amashul Loishano El B'Shtar Matana. That when we say in that Mishnah that a kinyan of karka can be accomplished only with a shtar only without kesef and without chazaka, that only works with a shtar matana, where there's no money changing hands anyway. Avu B'Shtar Mecha Loikana Abjitin Loidemel. But when it comes to a sale, no, the kinyan is not. You need both kesef and you need shtar.
In other words, you cannot delay the exchange of money.
In other words, if there wasn't a valid exchange of money, then it's not a valid sale. So therefore, when I'm saying that we were talking about before Rav Nachman that we were talking about in the Bismedrish that nevertheless we say she is koinet and we don't allow the husband to say like galuya zuzeh that it was a false sale, it was only for appearance's sake, that is a big chiddush. Because based on the Mishnah and Kiddushin, with Shmuel's explanation, you would only have that a shtar by itself is enough by a matana, not by a mecher.
So then there's a machlekes between Shmuel and Rav Nachman.
No, not really. No, really? No. Rav Nachman is telling us that even though when it comes to a shtar mecher, you need the money to change hands. But after all, over here, it's not certain that the money wasn't hers. He's arguing. The husband is arguing that it wasn't hers, or that it should have been nichsim alog or whatever. We don't know that for sure. And therefore, Rav Nachman is telling us we ignore that claim. And we say the mecher is a mecher because there was kesef and there was a shtar, and therefore we're good. So, but it is a chiddush, the fact that we don't say legaluya zuzeh. However, Rav Huna comes back at him, v'lav moisiv Rav Hamnuna, but after all, isn't there also in that connection, there is the stira that Rav Hamnuna pointed out from a braisa, which says the shtar ketzad. What does it mean that that a field can be acquired through a shtar? If the seller writes out to the buyer on a piece of paper or on a piece of earthenware, even if that piece of paper or earthenware is not itself worth a shava pruta, he writes him, sodi mechuraloch, sodi knuyaloch. He says, my field is sold to you, or my field is acquired, or Agos Abach changes it on the basis of the parallel gemara nesunaloch, my field is given to you, hareza mechura nesunah, then this field is considered given or is considered sold or given. Apparently, without there being money involved. So therefore, you see that's not like what Shmuel is saying, that a shtar only works where there's ketzef money also involved. It sounds like the shtar by itself can work as well. So you're back to then what's the chiddush of what's your milim malyus that you were discussing in the mismedrash there.
Knuya means sold money. How you sell?
No, knuya means it's acquired. Oh. It's yours now. Right. You owe me the money for it.
Oh, but, right.
Yeah. Incidentally, a Tosfos asked the question of you.
Cannot come back and take looking with Susie.
Right, that the sale is a sale. You still owe me the money for it. The money that you gave me is no good because, but the sale is a sale. Yeah, Tosfos, by the way, discusses the issue why it's important to say that the piece of paper or the cheres didn't have wasn't worth a shava prota. What's the difference? You know, the face of it, who cares how much the shtar is? No, but you're not the shtar itself. You have two different kinyonim. You have kinyon kesef and you have kinyon shtar. But you don't need kinyon kesef. We're saying shtar by itself, kinyon shtar is enough. So who cares whether the shtar is worth a prota or not? So Tosfos just leaves it as a question. Other Rishonim give a couple of different explanations. One of them is that nevertheless, if it's not worth a shavu prota, maybe it's not considered to have any chashivos. Maybe it shouldn't be considered a real shtar. We're saying that no, it doesn't matter.
Wasn't there an issue back in about a shtar being shavu prota and not being confused with the purchase of the shtar?
That was where you're selling the shtar itself. Are you selling the shtar choiv itself? Are you selling the piece of paper, or are you selling the debt that's listed in the shtar? Here we're talking about something else. Here we're talking about a shtar that actually affects the kinyan.
Right, that has nothing to do with it. Okay,
yeah.
It was just coming in my mind that something.
Yeah, Tosfos also discusses the question, by the way, that usually a shtar is not valid if you write it on something which could easily be altered, and a cheres is like that. You write with ink on cheres, it can very easily be altered. Tosfos talks about a little bit about the whole matter of edim mesira versus edim chasima. Is it maybe that as long as you have valid edim that it was given over, then it should be good?
That works for kiddushin, and who says it applies?
Well, it'd be the same thing, but actually, other Rishonim point out actually if there is a difference anyway. Here, that kind of thing where we're saying that a shtar has to be something that can't easily be altered is talking about a shtar that's kept for a raya. Here, the shtar is not kept for a raya. The shtar is what's accomplishing the actual kinyan. So it's the equivalent in that sense, for example, of a get, where the giving of the get itself accomplishes the gerushin, and in principle, in theory, you don't need the actual get afterwards. Practically speaking, you do, because you need to collect your ksuba, and you need to use it to get remarried. But in principle, once the get is given, then you don't need it anymore. Same thing over here. Once the shtar is given, you need another shtar to show that you have ownership of the karka, unless you're going to have edim, but that's a different shtar. But the actual shtar itself, that says sodi mechura loch, sodi knuya loch, in principle, you only need it momentarily, and therefore it doesn't matter if it's something that could easily be altered. Okay, anyway. So, back to then. So, based on what Rav Hamnuna pointed out, you have that braisa that says that a field can be acquired with a shtar, and no mention of kesef, so it sounds like a shtar by itself is good.
Maybe it's a braisa from...
Unless we have a reason to say otherwise, we're not going to assume that a braisa is wrong.
No,
especially Rav Hamnuna.
Yeah.
Especially Rav Hamnuna is bringing it in. He obviously had a reason to bring it in. There's obviously, he figured there's a contradiction over here. And the answer is, Rav Nachman answers back, but don't you know that Rav Hamnuna itself, sure, he brought up the question, but he also answered it. But Moichas Sadeum Pnei Rasa, that specific case that the Braita is talking about, where the shtar itself is enough, without money being involved, is talking about when you're selling a field because it's bad quality. So when you're selling a field of normal quality, you'd like to get the money before you actually hand it over. But when it's bad quality, you're looking to get rid of it as fast as possible. Taket, you, the seller, would rather have the kinyan take effect as fast as possible before the guy realizes what kind of he got a bad bargain over here. So therefore, yes.
He claims house afterwards.
If he claims Mecca, so it's fine, but we're not talking about that. We're talking about that it's bad. You're eager to get rid of it as fast as possible. You still don't want that the guy is going to say, you know what, I changed my mind. I realized I don't need a bad field like that anymore. And then you're left stuck holding the bad field. So you'd be interested in getting rid of it as fast as possible. Yeah, by all means, be koneh with a shtar only. You can pay me the money later. And at that point it'll be irrevocable, and the guy is gonna have to come up with the cash. But in a regular case, then you have what Shmuel is saying, that with a Steinmecher, usually you need both. A Steyr is not enough. So there you go then. So now again, going back to the original Milim Malyusa, that was saying that the exchange of money, that the fact that she gave him money, not necessarily was that money valid money, because it didn't necessarily validly belong to her, and we're still saying that the kinyan takes effect. That's a big chiddush.
Right.
No, it doesn't contradict, because then we don't know for sure that that money isn't hers, but it is a chiddush after all. The fact that we say maybe it is hers, then it is a valid mechira.
And you cannot come and say they give you the tzitzit.
Yeah. And the Gemara continues, Rabbi Messiah Bam Shmeid Rav Nachman, or Rav Ashi Yomar, apparently two different Gersois over here, who exactly continued with this detail. But Matana Bikash Litna Loi, there's another way of explaining the stira between the Braisa that we just quoted, the Braisa that Rav Hamnuna quoted, and what Shmuel said. The Braisa, we could say, is not talking about a sale at all. The Braisa is talking about a gift. When we say kosev layal and yara alcheres sadi mechor aloch sadi knuyaloch, we don't mean that it's a sale. We're talking about it's a gift. I then in that case, if it's a gift, you're intending to give it to the other person as a gift, or in this case, for example, the husband is intending to give it to his wife as a gift. V'lama kosev lay b'loshen mecher. In that case, why are you mentioning the expression of a sale in that shtar? Why are you saying sadi mechor aloch instead of just sadi nesun aloch? The reason is, you're doing that in order to improve his position. Namely like this, there's an advantage to a sale over a matana, and there's an advantage to a matana over a sale. The advantage of a sale is that a sale usually comes with a chayus, that if the field gets taken away by a bal chayv or what have you, that I'll reimburse you for it. On the other hand, there's an advantage to a matana. As we learned when we learned in Bava Metzia, all about the dinim of Bar Metzra, we said over there, normally you sell a field to somebody else, then the closest adjoining neighbor has the first right to buy it, to buy it away from him, and then give him the cash and let him go find himself a field to buy someplace else. This way the Bar Metzra will have one big field, which is easier to manage than two sets of ones. But we said over there, it doesn't apply to a matana. Because if you give somebody a matana, you can't expect that he's going to say, okay, well, fine, I'll sell this thing. You don't sell off a matana like that and go buy something else. So therefore, here we have this person or this seller, whether it's to another person or whether it's to his own wife, as the case may be, whatever. Essentially, he's trying to do it as a matana. But if it's a matana, then you're going to have you have an advantage of by the dinim of Bar Metzra, but therefore you're also adding the detail that I'm calling it a sale, so that way I'll reimburse you for it if it gets taken away. I'm accepting achrayus for it as well. So that's why you would be writing both those expressions. Now, Tosfos has a problem with that, actually, because we said over there in that sugya Bar Metzra, we said fakert. If you write out a document that says it's a gift, but you write in there achrayus, then we say that's just you're trying to play games over here. Nobody writes achrayus on a gift, on a matana. Obviously, it's a disguised sale.
So we assume that it's a real sale.
So they assume it's a real sale. So then in that case, the dinner by metzra would be operative. So what are you telling me that you're writing over here matana in order to avoid the problems of by metzra? So Tosfos, uh, so, So Tosfos is saying that, so Tosfos says a couple of possibilities. First of all, the Braisa may not mean that you write both expressions, Mechura and Nesuna. It could mean that you're only writing Mechura, you're only writing a sale, you were only writing an expression of a sale, but you're doing that in order to show that you're accepting Achrayus. Fine, so you won't have the advantage, so you won't have the advantage as far as Bimetzer, but at least you'll have the advantage of Achrayus, but that can still be considered a Matana. Or, Tosfos says, we could be talking about that you wrote two separate shtaris. You wrote one with the word mocher and the other one with the word nosun, and this way you'll have both of them available. If it comes to a case of bimetzra, you'll pull out the one that says matana. If it comes to achrayus, you'll pull out the one that says mechira. And that apparently yes. And that way.
Is that the same thing as sitting on the shtari kriner?
No, because if you have one shtar that says both of them, then they contradict each other. Matana and achrayus contradict each other. But like this, you pull out the one shtar as you need it. And then, yeah.
But that is exclusive of the other one, then.
That's what we're saying. You have two different documents.
Right.
So
you use one.
When
he's
when
still lying to his wife.
No, well, he's selling to his wife. We're talking about over here.
Right, selling to his wife.
But that's what we're saying, in other words. So you could answer, in other words, that the Braisa that says Bishtar Ketzad, that the Braisa of Hamnuna quoted, is talking about where it's essentially a Matana. Whereas previously when Shmuel was talking about that you need the money as well, is talking about a sale, as he explicitly said, b'shtar mecher.
And that you could do with two.
And that you need both. That you need money and a shtar.
Right.
So therefore, going back to what Rav Nachman is telling Rav Huna about the milim malyasa. So you have when a person sells a field to his wife, she's koina, and we don't say the galuya loser. So we can be talking about that it was a matana, so there's no legaluya zuzi involved, but it's written in the expression of a mecha, and therefore that works, and therefore that could be what our Mishnah said when we asked how is it possible that she has a raya on karka, which will then belong to her, is a case like this, where it's a matana disguised as a mecher, or vice versa, a mecher disguised as a matana. Since no money is expected to be changing hands, there's no galuya zuzi involved, therefore, fine, she has a chazaka on that field, or she has a shtar, and eventually, after 3 years, after that,
why
she'll have a chazaka. We said, because of bar mitzvah, because of achrayus, this way she has the best of both worlds. So now the Gemara continues. Meisvit. Fine, but I have a contradiction to this whole business. You're telling me then, Rav Nachman, that you don't say legaluya zuzehu da'asa. But lova min eved b'shichroi, a braita says that if a person borrowed money from his own eved, and later, and it can happen, usually an eved, mashakana eved kana rabbi, but again, the same way as we talk about a married woman, it can happen that she has nechasim of her own. It can happen, for example, an eved may have been given nechasim almanas that his master shouldn't have any control over them, whatever. So this guy borrowed money from his own eved, v'shichruroi, and later on he freed that eved, or mina isha v'gersha, or he borrowed money from his own wife, and later on he divorced her. Ein lahen olav klum. They have no claim. They have no claim against him. They have no claim against him for repayment of the debt. And Tosfos talks about that. Actually, on the face of it, what are we mentioning that he freed the eved or he divorced the wife? Wouldn't the same thing apply if the eved is still an eved and the wife is still a wife? And Tosfos says, right, what we're assuming at this point is that, of course, if they're still married or the eved is still an eved, of course, the ein lahem olav klum, mashkana eved kana rabba, and the same thing with the wife. You would think that maybe once the eved is freed or the wife is divorced, maybe it should take effect.
But
no.
That's
the question. In other words, like galuya zuzi. Why is it ein lahen olav klum? Why is it that they don't have any claim for repayment against him? My time, a lav mishum d'amrina legaluya zuzi or dubai. L'chura, because he has the ability to claim, I only did it because I wanted to find out what they're hiding from me. So we see that concept of a galuya zuzi is valid.
Right. Of course, if someone gave them money, rock on mass that they can eat the parrot or they can eat the money. Itself.
They're going to have to bring a raya that that's the case, though. Otherwise, we should assume that, yeah. And by the way, I mean, when we say love him in a eved or love him in a isha, the Rashbam adds, you know, we're talking about a regular halva where shtar is written and you're creating a shibur on your nechasim. But you're only doing that. You're only going through that whole thing of borrowing money, of putting a shibud on your nechassim, etc. Only legaluya zodit. And we're saying that therefore you're not obligated to repay. The answer is shiny chassim b'le nichal eli shav yenafshe eved loy v'le ishmalbe. Yes, but it's different that when it comes to borrowing money from your eved or from your wife, if there's any, a person would, the Pasuk has an expression, the Gemara quotes in various places, l'shav yenafshe, to make himself. The Pasuk uses the expression eved loyve le'ish malve. The loyve is a slave to the malve. Now, not literally, but there are a number of places in the Gemara where there are various implications from that. One of them is, for example, I think we learned in Baba Kama, if you have an argument where the din Torah should take place, then the malva has the upper hand about where it should take place, and the loyve has to go there. There's a couple of other things that come from this din. But I mean, you also have just on the straightforward level, you borrowed money from somebody, you feel like an eved to them, you feel indebted to them. So therefore, a person is not usually going to want to be eved loyve leish malve, that he should be an eved to his own eved or to his own wife. So therefore, you have reason to argue legaluyazuz. But it's different when it comes to a sale. A sale, you have there's no eved loyve involved in selling property. So therefore, you can argue that was a fully valid sale. We don't accept the legaluya zozer, like Rav Nachman said before. Whereas with Alba, you do. I don't remember, actually, and I don't remember if it was in Baba Kama, actually. I know we've definitely had it before. Maybe it was in Baba Matsya. We've definitely talked about it before, but I don't remember where it was, actually.
I think in the beginning third of Baba Kama.
Could be. I don't remember. Anyway. Okay. And actually, by the way, I mean, again, we're going to go on later in our Gemara to distinguish between the whole matter of whether the money was previously hidden or not, and we're going to see that comes out l'halacha. The Magid Mishnah, the Magid Mishnah, the Rambam talks about, actually, that the Rambam seems to draw a distinction in that regard between selling property, where it depends where the husband sells property to his wife, where it depends whether the money was tmunin, whether it was previously hidden or whether it was something he knew about, versus for the halva, where the Rambam doesn't make any such distinction. And the Magid Mishnah, the Rambam, halva meaning alone, like we're talking about over here, where he borrows money from his wife. And the argument is, the Magid Mishnah says, that Rambam may hold that when it comes to a halva, Given that now the money is in his possession because he borrowed it, then he has every right to say that even if it wasn't previously hidden, okay, but it's supposed to be like usual nixim alug. It's supposed to be that I'm eating payrus of it. It's supposed to be that we buy kaka and I eat payrus of it. What are you doing, holding on to it and then lending it to me? Therefore, he has the ability to say, I don't have to, therefore, he has the ability to say that I'm not going to repay you. Aim line all of plum, like we're saying over here. Whereas when it comes to a sale, according to the Rambam, yeah. Whereas when it comes to a sale, it'll depend whether it's tmunin or not.
Okay, tmunin, yeah.
If it's tmunin, then it's not a valid sale, because you can say legaluyas goes after all. And if it wasn't tmunin, then it's a valid sale. That's how the Magid Mishnah understands the Rambam. On the other hand, most other Rishonim say that there's not really a difference between a sale or a loan in that connection. There's strictly a difference between tmunin or not. If the money was tmunin, then the sale is not a sale and the halva is not a halva. Yeah. If it wasn't tmunin, then the sale is a sale and the halva is a halva. All right. Shalach Rav Huna Barabi.
And the Rambam says it's only valid for...
The Rambam doesn't say this explicitly, but by implication, because in Hilchot Issus, when he talks about the dinim of the husband selling karka to his wife, he mentions the distinction between tmunin and not. But in Hilchot Malva Voloiva, when he talks about the dinim of a husband borrowing from his wife, where he says ein lahen olaflum, he doesn't mention that distinction. So the Magid Mishnah understands that the Rambam, in fact, holds that distinction is only valid in the one case and not in the other. Yeah.
Right. Okay. He says it doesn't make sense. It
doesn't make sense. The Magid Mishnah continues that the Rashba and the other Rishonim say that's the key thing. It's tmunin or not.
Probably.
I think both opinions are grotten shulchan aruch. I'm not sure. Okay. Sholach Rav Huna Ba'Avin. Okay, Rav Huna Ba'Avin, or Rav Huna Ba'Avin, the Rashba Maharagirsa, sent a message as follows to the Talmidim of the Beis Medrash. Hamoichas Sodei L'Ishtei Kansa, if a man sells a field to his wife, she is koneh, u'bal ochel peiros. However, the husband continues to eat payrus from it because it's just like any other property that she got while she's in the marriage. Like, for example, property she inherited, it would also be considered nixim alug. Effectively, this property that he sold her becomes nixim alug. He's still entitled to the payrus of it. Bram, however, Rav Huna Bar Avin continues, Bram, however, Rav Abba, Rav Abbo, Chogzele Adur Amru, but Rav Abba and Rav Abbo and all the other great Chachamim of the generation have said, B'matona Bikish Litnela, that, like we said on Amud Aleph, that the husband is not entitled to payrus. We should assume that the husband really meant to give it to her as a gift.
That excludes
payrus
for him?
Yes. And again, like we just said before, we would assume that why did he write it as a loshen of a sale? Because he wanted to improve her position as far as the dinner bar mitzvah or whatever, or as far as achrayus, as we said before. So it comes out. Then you have a machlokes. Rav Huna bar Avin holding that she gets paid, that he gets paid, and Rav Abba and Rav Abbo and the rest of them saying not.
And he would have mistakenly made it as a matana.
Not mistakenly, he deliberately wanted to give it to her as a matana, but he phrased it as a mecher. He didn't actually take cash from her for it. He phrased it as a mecher in order to be able to write achrayus in here, because you don't write achrayus on a matana. He wanted to write, he wanted to say, I'm giving you this field, and furthermore, if any of my valid, he's doing like this. He's giving the field to his wife. He's not expecting her to pay him cash for it. He's furthermore saying, however, we're going to consider it like a sale in the sense that I want to make you happy. I want that you shouldn't have tarumas to lie, that you shouldn't have complaints that I gave it to you and now my valid chovas come and take it away from you. If that happens, I will reimburse you for it. That's a chayv.
You can't have a matzana
and right. But that's the thing. When it comes to bar mitzvah, the bnei hametzer, the other bar mitzvah can argue that you're just doing a sale disguised as a gift. I don't have to respect that. And when it comes to the dinner bar mitzvah, but fine, the husband himself wants to accept the chayus. Fine, let him accept the chayus. The bar mitzvah doesn't have to accept that necessarily, which is what led Tosfos to say that maybe we're talking about two different shtaris, or maybe that he only wrote loshen mecher or whatever. But nevertheless, it really is a gift. Tosfos, by the way, discusses a girsa over here that maybe we don't have the word bram over here, that maybe actually there's no machlokas over here between Rav Chia, between Rav Huna bar Avin and Rav Abba and Rav Abbo and Kol Gedor Le'Adur. All of them are saying that the husband is entitled to payrus. That he writes it the matana, but that doesn't necessarily mean that he's excluding himself from the payrus.
As opposed to
the girsa that we have with bram means you have a machlokas. Bram means but. If you don't have the bram over there, it means that Rav Huna is saying that Rav Huna bar Avin is saying the husband oichel peiros, and you should know that furthermore, Rav Abba and Rav Abbo and Kol Gedor Le'Adur Amru, the reason why that works is the matana bikash litnela, that he's essentially giving it as a matana, but he's only writing as a mecher to improve her position as far as achrayus, but it doesn't mean that he's foregoing the peiros.
Did he have to explicitly mention that he's not foregoing the payrus?
According to this explanation, it would mean that he didn't close it yet. Again, maybe. So, okay, if once we have this, then we're going to have the same contradiction as before. And by the way, the Rashbam points out why we're going to repeat the same contradiction and the same answer is because these two discussions took place in two different Bate Medrash at different times. Each one, they pointed out the same objection without necessarily being aware of the other. Each one, they pointed out Sira from the Braitha Lavam and Eved that we quoted before. Each one, they answered in the same way. When Ravina and Ravashi assembled the Gemara together, they left each one. No, they left each one as it was. They left each one as it had been learned in the respective Bismedish. So, basically, we have the same contradiction as before. We say Lavam and Eved B'shichra. If a person borrows money from his own Eved and later on frees the Eved, or Mina Ishav Gersha, he borrows money from his own wife and divorces her. Ein Lahen Olav Kulum, we say that they don't have any claim against him for repayment. My timer, now why shouldn't they? Lav Misham Da'amri Lagaluya Zuzahu Deba. Lachura, that should be because, like we said before, he should be able to argue that I only pretended to sell it because I wanted Lagaluya Zuzah. I wanted to find out about that hidden money over here. So,
what's even in Gerushin?
That's what we're arguing. That the any money that the wife has is supposed to be Nichsim Lur. Or
the marriage is consumed. Once it's consumed.
No, but he borrowed from her while they were still married. Obviously, if he borrowed from her after they were divorced, that's different. But, you know, there's a different gain. I mean, the Gemara mentions elsewhere, I believe we had it in Ksubas, I don't remember, that if a husband has business dealings with his wife after their divorce, basically, we'll put him in Chayrim, actually. You have no business having business deals. You have no business having business deals with your wife after, you know, because, Okay. Anyway. So, And the answer is, again, Shiny Hossam below the Shavi Inish Eved Loivel Ishmael. But again, we could argue a person is not going to want to make himself an Eved to his own, an Eved, which a Loive is to a Malva, to his own Eved or to his own wife. Therefore, we can assume that he was only doing it Legaluya Zuzet. But again, it's different when it comes to a sale or a gift, as the case may be. Even if it's, even if it's an actual sale, you could still say it's still a valid sale and we don't say Legaluya Zuzet.
Because he's not an Eved.
Because okay. by selling a field, you're not making yourself an Eved to the other person. There is Achrayus, it's true, that Rashbam points out, Anamud Aleph, but still, the Achrayus hasn't taken effect yet. You're not yet an Eved to the other guy until the Achrayus clause kicks in, at which point you owe the person the money. But fine, up to that point, you're not making yourself an Eved to them, so there's no issue with that. More on this topic. Omer Rab, Hamloiches Sodah LeIshtei Kansa. Again, if a person sells, a man sells a field to his wife, she is koina. Va'bal Oichel Peiros. However, the husband is entitled to the Peiros, like we just said, because the fact is, even if we consider it Nichsim Lug, the husband is entitled to Peiros. But the Matana, if he gives it to her as a present, Kansa Ve'ena Ba'al Oichel Peiros. Then she's koina, and the husband does not eat Peiros.
So we had
two different girsos over here. According to the Rashbam's girsa and the girsa that we have in front of us with the Bram, that we have a machlokus, then Rav is saying like Rav Huna Ba'omin, and he's saying that he gets Peiros,
right.
And he's saying when Rav Abba and Rav Abohu and Kol G'dolei Ador said that it's really essentially a matana and therefore she shouldn't have Peiros, that would be if it really was a valid matana, but not if it's a matana disguised as a sale or whatever. According to Tosfos, that there was no machlokas previously between Rav Huna Bar Ovin and Rav Abohu and Rav Abba and Rav Abohu and the rest of them, then it means that Rav is agreeing with all of them. It's a sale. And therefore he is entitled to Peiros. He is, because it's failed. It's a nechsim alog. Rabbi Lozer omer echazeh kansa ve'ena ba'al oichel Peiros. However, Rabbi Lozer says no. Either way, she's coined in the field, and the husband doesn't get any Peiros. The Gemara tells one time Ovad Rav Chista uvdek Rabbi Lozer. One time Rav Chista paskined in an actual case according to Rabbi Lozer that, even though it was a sale, the husband sold the karka to his wife, the husband was not, he said the husband is not entitled to Peiros. Omer le Rabban Ukva v'Rabban Nechemya b'nei binsei d'Rav, l'Rav Chista. So Rav Ukva and Rabban Nechemya, who were the grandsons of Rav, they come to Rav Chista. Actually, Hagoyta Bach changes that they weren't the grandsons of Rav, they were the grandsons of Rav Chista, as the Bach here said. Anyway, they come to Rav Chista and they say, "Shavik ma Rav Reviv Obed Kizutri. What is this, Rebbe? You're setting aside the opinion of the great ones, meaning Rav, and you're taking up the opinion of the lesser ones, not of the lesser ones, Rav Elazar. Rav Elazar is a Talmud of Rav Yechanan." Rabbi Yochanan is more or less on the same level as Rav. Even the Gemara tells us in Cholin that Rabbi Yochanan, when he wrote letters to Rav, he would address him L'Rabbeinu Shebabavel, to our Rebbe in Babel. Rav was older than Rabbi Yochanan. He was one of the actual Talmidim of Rebbe. Rabbi Yochanan was one of the junior Talmidim. There's another Gemara in Cholin where Rabbi Yochanan.
They were both younger.
Well, younger than what?
I mean, they were both very young compared to Rebbe.
Well, of course, they're from the next generation after Rebbe. Yeah. But there's a Gemara in Chulin where Rabbi Yochanan is talking to somebody who just came from Bavel Teretz Yisrael. He asks him about what's doing in Bavel. He asks him who's the Reish Sidra, who's the Rosh Hashiva there in Bavel. The guy answers Abba Aricha, which was Rav's nickname. Abba, and then Rabbi Yochanan says, "How are you talking? You're calling him just that instead of calling him Rav. You should know." He says, "When I was a young boy, I was sitting in the Beis Medrash over there. I was sitting like what is he sat? 17 rows back from the front. They sat in order of age and knowledge and whatever. So I was sitting way in the back. Rav is sitting up there in the front and talking in Torah with Rebbe, and there's sparks of fire flying back and forth between them. They're talking on such a high level of learning, and you're calling him Abba Aricha like he's your friend." Anyway, so the point is, Rabbi Yochanan had a lot of derechetes for Rav. But nevertheless, Rav and Rabbi Yochanan can at least be considered somewhat on the same level. As a matter of fact, actually, the Gemara tells us elsewhere that when Rav and Rabbi Yochanan argue in halacha, the halacha is usually like Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Lozer is a Talmud of Rabbi Yochanan.
How come it's not like Rabbi Yochanan?
It is usually like Rabbi Yochanan.
Yeah, why?
I don't know, maybe because Rabbi Yochanan outlived Rav, so therefore he was able to reconsider what Rav had said. I don't know. Anyway, bottom line is that Rabbi Elazar is a Talmud of Rabbi Yochanan. He's more of the Eretz Yisrael. Very nice. He's the great Talmud Chacham in Eretz Yisrael, but he's still not of the caliber of Rav. So they're asking Rabbi Chisda, are you talking that you're ignoring Rav's opinion in favor of Rabbi Elazar? So he answers them, no, as a matter of fact, I am going like the great ones as well. Because Rabbi Yochanan, who is, again, at least someone on the same level as Rav, also holds the same way. And we know this because when Rabbi Yochanan came from Eretz Yisrael, he reported that Rabbi Yochanan said, just like Rabbi Elazar said, that either way she's kind of. So therefore, Rabbi Chisda says, I'm following Rabbi Yochanan's shita, not Rav's. The bottom line halacha, as far as this is, that if a man sells, if a husband sells a field to his wife, she's not koine. The husband is entitled to peiros, is entitled to peiros from that field. But if he gives it to her as a present, konsa, then she acquires it. And the husband does not get peiros. So the question is,
if he sells it to his wife,
then the problem with that is not koine implies that she doesn't get the goof or the pay.
Yes. So what do we say?
That's the question. What is he saying? That she eats the pay? So that's the question. Tauti. Why is Rava saying two statements that seem to contradict each other?
Exactly.
By Matana, I can understand. Right. Why? Yeah. The answer is loikasha kanba mois tmunin, kanba mois shenin tmunin. Here comes the distinction that we've been talking about before, but now the Gemara first brings in this distinction explicitly. If the money had been hidden, if the husband hadn't known that this money exists, then legaluya zuzi. Then he has the argument that we've been talking about all this time, that he has the ability to say that I only agreed to the sale in order that the money will be brought out, and now it'll be clarified therefore, of course, he's entitled to the goof and the payers. Right. The field is his. The field remains his. As opposed to if the money was not hidden, if he knew of this money already, then he's still entitled to payers. Like we said before, he's still entitled to payers, which means that we go like Rav, in other words, not like Rabbi Yochanan and not like Rabbi Elazar, and not like Rabbi Chisda, for that matter. If it was Tmunin, then there's no sale at all. Then we say the Galuya Zuzer Huda'asa, that he only agreed to the sale in order to unearth this money.
Right.
And once that happens, it depends what he's claiming this money is. Is he claiming that this money was his actually outright and she stole it from him?
Right.
Or is he claiming that, no, fine, this money was yours, legitimately, but it's Nixim Alug then, in that case, like any other money of yours.
Prepared.
And in that case, we should be buying Karka and I'll eat the payers of it.
Right.
So one way or the other, yeah.
If it's not
Tmunin, then he knew about it already, so then it's a valid sale, but then nevertheless, it becomes her property, fine, the goof is hers, but the payers are his, like any Nixim Alug. With a matana, then he's giving it to her outright. And in fact, the famous expression we're going to learn about on the next paragraph. So when you give it. We talk about moicher. Moicher is b'ayin ra or b'ayin yofa. We talked about that earlier in the sefer. We're going to have that more of that in the next sefer. Noisin is always b'ayin yofa noisin. So therefore, it means you gave her the payers as well. The Amr of Yehuda, and we know this because Rabbi Yehuda said, Mois Tmunin Lekonsa, that exactly that. If she uses Mois Tmunin, then it's not a valid Kenyan. Mois Shainin Tmunin Konsa. But if it was money that he already knew about before, then she's Koine. So therefore, Rava says, bottom line, we accept that opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, and that becomes the halacha. And so it is.
And not the opinion of Rav.
So they're not the opinion of Rav, right. So again, according to most of the Rishonim, this same distinction between Tmunin and not also applies to the loans that we were talking about before. The guy borrowed money from his wife. If it wasn't Mois Tmunin, then it is a valid loan, and if not, then not. According to the Rambam, it's not really a distinction. It only applies to buying character, according to the Magen Mishnah's understanding of the Rambam anyway. That it only applies to buying character that we make that distinction, Tmunin or not. But when it comes to a loan, it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter. That was right or wrong. I'm both of them.
Either way, ain't loyal to Flum. Either way, she has no claim for repayment unless she can prove that the money was hers, that the money was entirely hers.
Yeah. Well, that's what we said at the beginning.
Right. Okay. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
We did have one after this.